Yo, welcome to the Cold World Podcast. It's good to talk to you all. Happy Martin Luther King Day. A big day for folks. And happy, my father's birthday was on the 15th. We had Martin Luther King's birthday. We also had Aaliyah's birthday. And Lord Jesus, we had Miss Sade Adu's birthday. She is 58 years old, and I just saw a picture of Sade. I saw a picture of what Sade looked like from like a few weeks ago, okay? That, I'm telling you, something about that black, that it don't crack. I don't know, she needs to sell water or lotion or whatever it is she using. I don't know if it's witchcraft. It's just crazy. Happy birthday coming up to you as well, Ryan. Thank y'all for joining me. Y'all told me that I needed to do this more. You said that the podcast coming out once every 2 weeks wasn't enough. Then I was doing it every week, and y'all said that wasn't enough. So I'm trying to do it a bit more now that I got the equipment at the crib and all that good stuff. So I'm going to jump into it, man. It's been a whole lot of craziness happening, so I'm going to talk about it. One of the things I'm going to talk about is Rob Snyder coming after Mr. John Lewis, which is just wild. And I had a lot to say to him on Twitter. So we're going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about just this general work week, man, and just what I'm trying to work towards and the ways that y'all can kind of be a part of that. Oh, this is an Apple Pencil. That's how I wrote down. Can y'all see the website and all that stuff? This is for the folks that's on live. For the people listening straight from the podcast, I have relaunched the website. So energyconverters.org is relaunched. I spent a lot of time on that this weekend redoing it so it could be something that y'all like, something that, don't look like it's from 19, you know what I'm saying, 90-something. But I want to make sure I keep that updated and make sure you all got that. Also, the best way to reach me is on Twitter. That's where I have the majority of my conversations, and that's at @C3rd. But anyway, so, man, it's so much, there's so much work to do. There's, like, so much happening as far as in education and my work as a board member at the hospital and just the work that I do freelance and just on my own. It's just a lot. And it was so much stuff to do. I was like, well, let me just do a podcast. I'll get it done, man. It's just a lot of writing, it's a lot of writing to get done just for work. So I have to dive into that. And I know a lot of folks are dreading having to go back to work tomorrow. But you know what, though? Be blessed, man, because there was a time in my life where, you know, I prayed for these type of jobs and these type of problems, and now I got them. So I'm blessed. And if you got a job to go to tomorrow, you blessed too, man. I know what it's like being in a family where that job thing was a real, real thing. And so, you know, we gotta make sure that we I don't want to complain myself up out of a blessing. You feel me? The other thing that I wanted to, you know, jump into, let's just start there, is with Rob Snyder. So Rob Snyder, I got at Rob Snyder for a few different reasons, but basically he just said some really stupid stuff on Twitter. He saw something that John Lewis has said. Now, if you don't know who this person is, he's a civil rights leader that was there with Martin Luther King. I mean, like, they sat at the same tables. This brother was beaten and abused, leading these marches with the man, and knows him very well. He became a mentor and a friend. What Rob Snyder did is Rob Snyder tried to remind this man what Martin Luther King did, what his friend did. And so, you know, there's this thing that happens where, see, white people, how do I say this? I think Martin Luther King has become a hallowed figure. And what I mean by that is that there is a core to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. that folks try to ignore or take away from him. And anytime a black person or a person of color gets upset, like, the go-to for a lot of white folks and just for some other type of folks as well is to start quoting Martin Luther King. and talk about the nonviolence and this, that, and the third. I just want folks to understand. And then they try to compare him to, like, how Malcolm X was always angry and Martin Luther King was this meek person. First off, that's wrong. MLK wasn't always just this super meek person. He was a beast. He was fierce. And if had he lived, I don't think he'd be very popular today. That's one. Two, he talked a lot about poverty and the poor, and that's where he was trying to really, you know, really start to do his work when he was murdered. And he said a lot of things that folks today wouldn't like. But the most egregious of this is when, you know, folks that are afraid of when black folks start to show they tend to quote Martin Luther King Jr. And it's offensive, you know, and I just want to say that. And so that's what happened. Rob Schneider basically was trying to explain to Lewis, who was his friend who was there, about the spirit of Dr. Martin Luther King. And so, you know, his Twitter mentions is a minefield right now. That dude has to deal with black Twitter in a way that he don't want to deal with them. And here's the thing. Here's what I'll say to Rob Schneider. Like, I'm going to keep it real with you. I like Rob Schneider. I don't think he's particularly talented. I think that he is the Memphis Bleek of comedy. Let me tell you what I mean by that. So I like Memphis Bleek enough as a rapper, but I don't know Memphis Bleek as really as a rapper. I know him as Jay-Z's friend. I know him as long as I'm alive, he's a millionaire. Jay-Z talking about Memphis Bleek. Rob Schneider is Adam Sandler's Memphis Bleek, okay? Adam Sandler hit it big early on, and as long as Adam Sandler gets to make movies, Rob Schneider is going to keep getting checks. And I'm not mad at him. Listen, if my best friend gets on like Adam Sandler's on, I ain't doing this. This, my life is different. I'm taking all that bread. I got you. I understand that. You know what I'm saying? So, Rob Schneider, a lot of people getting at you because they don't think you have talent and all that good stuff and that you a moocher off your friend. I'm not mad at you. Me and my friends got a pact. Like, me and my brother Will had this conversation. Whichever one of us blow first, like, the other one is just, you just on staff. Like, it's just, that's just how we rocking with that. But the problem is, bruh, is that you can't tell this black civil rights leader anything about Dr. Martin Luther King on Martin Luther King's birthday. Do you understand? That is like some kid, you know, telling me about my best friend on his birthday, and he's been dead because he was murdered. Like, you can't do that. And the audacity of you to think that you can. See, white folks have been, this is the thing. Let me tell you what I like about this new Trump era. And I know y'all don't like when black people say these things. But let me tell you what I like about this new Trump era. Is that people starting to speak their minds. And I'm here for it. Speak it. I am here for it. Because let me tell you why. Listen, white folks do not like the term white privilege, okay? They hate it. They don't like it, okay? Well, not all white. Some white folks don't care. But there is a contingency of white people that don't like that. And now that Trump is in power, they calling that out. This white privilege stuff is a myth. It's just some stuff that y'all kind of made up. An example of white privilege is Rob Schneider, who is not even elite in his position in life, trying to lecture a civil rights legend who not only is a civil rights legend, but caught real bricks to the head, caught real fists, got bit by real dogs, and became friends with the man and saw his friend assassinated. White privilege is you feeling like you can tell that man about what Dr. Martin Luther King felt like. What that is, that's that white privilege stuff that folks is talking about. It is the audacity that you felt that it's okay for you to reach out and try to school that man on his homie. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. So what's up, Rob? I see your question. I do. I see the Facebook piece that you asked about. Yes, this is all on iTunes. It's on iTunes. It's on SoundCloud. It's on Stitcher. It's in most places that you can get podcast. And again, let me thank you all. I think we are approaching the 200,000 mark for the podcast, and I think that that's dope. I'm glad that y'all like to listen to me run my mouth. It's a blessing. But yeah, man, y'all. So I will make sure all that information is up for you, Rob. You should be able to find that. So let me talk about the website, just since Rob talked about that. So one of the things that I do is, aside from my work in school districts, aside from the work that I do, I serve as an executive board member for UCSF Benioff Hospitals and have to make a lot of tough decisions. But I love serving. But what I like to do most is I like to build things that helps my community, right? So I like to have these podcasts because there's a lot of students that I had over here, there's a lot of families that like listen, and they usually get stuff out of it. So I like to build tools and have conversations. I like to take things that have been framed in a really complicated way and make them very simple. People are going to try to make things that pertain to black people or poor people and all these folks, they're going to try to make them seem more complicated than what they are. And I like to bust through that. So I have a website, and I redid it. And at that website, you can find my blogs, you can find videos, you can find the podcast, you can book me there too now. So if you work at a school, if you work at a church, if you want me to talk to whomever, you can book me through there. Just click in the top right, it says book now. Put your information in, and then we'll get back to you and we'll make that happen. But that's what I love to do. I have some travel coming up. I will be in Atlanta at the end of this week. I'll be in Atlanta for about 3 days. I'll be speaking there. And then I'll come back home for a little bit. I think I have to go back to Atlanta. And then I think I have to go to D.C. I'm not sure. I have to check. I don't always run that calendar. But there will be some traveling. I'll be out talking and speaking to folks. But don't worry if you feel like budget is an issue, and especially if it has anything to do with black kids, I'll work with you. That's just something that I live to do. I've been blessed to do it. It's not about money. It's about getting in front of people. And somebody, thank you, Ryan, said, don't generalize too much. Listen, when I'm talking about like white folks or whatever, I don't particularly have, like I said, I don't have the same issues that I think a lot of people have. I didn't like Trump, but I wasn't too happy about Hillary Clinton coming in either. I'm gonna be honest about that. I felt, this is what I believe as a black man. Let me just be honest with you, all right? It don't matter who sits in that chair. It's gonna be rough. It's been rough. I work in education. And now there's like all these conversations around education and, you know, what's going to happen? How bad is it going to get? And I always look at those differently. And I look at people with these perplexed looks because I look at data every day. And it's been bad. It has been bad. So here's my issue. If you're a person of color and you feel in this way, my thing is, brother, sister, where have you been? Like, what is your experience to where things have just been great and now something is about to just get really, really bad? It's been bad. But you know what the problem is that we've normalized the bad. Let me say that again. We've normalized the bad. So me growing up with food stamps and in the hood and seeing people get killed and stuff like that, when you see it every day, it becomes normalized. That stuff is not normal. We got under 20% proficiency in literacy, yo, in all black kids in California. That is not normal. So whether it's Trump sitting in that seat, whether it's Hillary Clinton in that seat, whether it's whoever, whether it's Obama sitting in that seat, it's bad. Now, I said this before, it can get worse. It can definitely get worse. Trump is a scary dude. It can definitely get worse. I get that. But I just, that's just hard for me as a person doing this work, like, that we are okay with just how bad it's been. It's terrible, yo. And so that's why I do the work that I do. And now for my white friends that are really up in arms about Trump, I've had this conversation. And I think Blackest did it. I posted the scene from Blackest. I thought that was a dope scene. I think Dave Chappelle did a dope clip on Saturday Night Live. But I feel like I've been saying that since before these things kind of happened. It's like I was talking to like some of my friends who were like really hurt and upset and crying about like Trump getting elected. And it was just like, this, in case you haven't been paying attention, it's been real bad for black folks, right? Like, it's been real bad. Like, as somebody who grew up in like the 80s and 90s, like, it's been bad for black people. But then I had to think about it. This is, and I don't think anybody's inherently bad. Let me be very clear on this. Like, I don't think that my white friends that had these issues and I had to kind of, you know, we had some heated conversations. I might have lost it on y'all a few times. Out of love, we had this conversation. You know what I'm saying? It was really close to what happened on Blackish. Like, and some of my white friends that's on here right now can probably speak to this. Like, I've had like these matches where I kind of went off on the room and just like, it, so, like, did you not believe me when I was telling you how bad it was? Did you not believe me when they were shooting kids in the middle of the street and leaving them out there? Did you not believe me when I was upset about Ferguson? Did you not believe me when I was upset about Trayvon Martin? Did you not believe me? And so on and so on and so forth. Like, did you not believe me around these things? You know what I mean? And, like, that's what it feels like. It feels like you coddled and you, like, wanted to be cool in the moment. You know what I'm saying? Like, you wanted to be an ally, but it was like, I don't really, it was like you was taking a position as somebody who don't really understand, but this seemed to be the right side, and I need to not upset this person. And I think what happened when Trump, when they announced that Trump was the winner, was someone in your mind, and you didn't articulate it this way, I don't think you said this out loud, I don't think that you even know that this is something that's kind of inside of you that came out. But it's akin to you woke up with a Trump presidency and you was like, oh, if I'm a liberal or progressive, I'm about to start getting treated like black folks. Like, that's really what it is. Like, when they talk about, like, healthcare being gone, they talk about, like, you know, all these like rights that you feel that you are entitled to, which I think that you are on some level, when you realize that that stuff could be gone and that your civil liberties were about to be in danger, yo, that's something that people in this country deal with every single day. And that's why you had the reaction that you had, because it's inhumane. So if you can really just take some time and think about that, right? And you can admit that, you know what? I didn't really think about it that way. Now think about what that says to me. Think about what that says to me as a black man now, right? That it is scary and it is worth crying over that you are about to get treated the way that you see black people in this country get treated. Martin Luther King preached about a lot of stuff. And one of the things that King preached about that he had the biggest problem with and that he was most afraid of was the white liberal. And the reason why he said that is because these are the folks that feel like they're doing the right thing. They believe that they are in their heart. You know what I'm saying? But they don't understand or realize that there's a shift, that there's a gap in between, you know, your outrage and the way that poor black people are actually treated. And it's dangerous because you might speak on something, but you're not doing the things necessary to take action on it. Like, you got, this is something that you got to really, really think about and wrestle with. I don't have a thing against poor white people. You know why? I grew up with poor white people. I lived in Chicago, but I lived in Kentucky with my grandmother. I played with these kids that didn't have shoes. We just out playing football and basketball together. It just kind of, we was poor. And we didn't know it was poor. It was just a neighborhood of where we were. You know what I'm saying? But these are places like, Kentucky is a coal place. Coal is a big thing. And for 4 years, 8 years, 12 years, we talked about those people. You know what I'm saying? And like, we enabled, when you couple how people in those areas felt, and it ain't just white people. Let me tell you, this is the thing. See, this is the thing, man. We got to have these conversations. If you're honest with yourself, As soon as Trump gets elected, all the black, everybody is like, I hate Trump, I hate Trump. Then as time goes on, in your small secret pockets, in the pockets where people, where you get to be really who you are, and people know you and y'all have real conversation and the mask come off, you start to hear conversations that it's a lot of people that like Trump. It's a lot of people that like Trump. It's the thing that that dude did. And I'm not, this is the thing. It's not even giving him credit. It's just saying that the gulf was so big and we were so out of touch here in the California bubble. And I said this, man, I am a progressive. I don't know if I'm a progressive in California. I'm a progressive back south, back east. You know what I'm saying? But like the way we talk about things, the way we talk about people, the way we talk about the uneducated, there are more people in this country without college degrees than there are with them. But if you live in California where it costs, where you got to make $120,000 just to live and you ain't even that comfortable, then yeah, the people around you that's in your sphere tend to be college educated. They tend to come from different backgrounds. They tend to be in a place where they talking about economic issues because they can worry about that because their rent is paid. When your rent ain't paid, you probably ain't too concerned about. Listen. It's hard to close down a coal plant and tell me about the economy and the environment when my family is going to be homeless. And until we start to actually realize, I'm not saying you succumb to Trump. You got to fight. Any of this crap that he's talking about, like the racist stuff and all that stuff, man, we got to like have these conversations. But when somebody, anytime we question something, especially in California, like there's no middle ground for conversation anymore. So for instance, the LGBTQ, like, that community, God bless them, yo. Like, the way that they organized to get Obama to do whatever they wanted him to do, and they fought hard. I'm not mad at that. But then, when a black person has some questions about some of those policies, now they're a pariah. Now they're losing their jobs. Now they are seen as somebody that's not progressive because they asked a question. Groupthink is groupthink is groupthink. You understand? Like, do you understand? So when a black person, and I get it, I like Obama. I hear it. I got a lot of black friends that don't. And when we in our space with the mask off, we have these conversations. They are mad and they are hurt and they are upset because they feel like this brother was a puppet and did whatever the LGBTQ community needed him to do. But he didn't do anything explicit for black people. So then let's have that conversation. When the Prop 8 thing came up and they took that loss, I saw these folks organized and they got on message. They started having conversations within their community. Like, check this out. We got to tone down these marches. We got to tone down the like running around naked during like beta breakers. We got to tone that down. This is what we want. This is how we going to get it. And they got it. Let me tell you about my people. Let me tell you about black folks. Tell me the three issues that we got as black people. I swear for Lord, you ask 10 people, you're going to get 30 different answers. Like, we can't come to terms and agree on nothing in 2017 or 2016. So there is no black platform. There's not. Okay, so we won't, you know what I'm saying? We want to, so let me even push a little deeper. Because this is what we're supposed to do, right? This is supposed to be real talk, right? People in public talk about they want police reform, they want change and all that stuff. I promise you, I guarantee you, because I've been in these places, when I talk about stop and frisk and I say why that's harmful, them same black folks that was out there with their afros out, with their shirts on, black power it is, got the fist up and all that stuff, they'll be like, nah, but I definitely want, no. That nigga in the hoodie, I need you to search him. And that's just real talk. Like, if we gonna have a conversation, let's have a conversation, right? As a country, I'm not even gonna say as a country we're divided. As black people, we are divided, and we are not letting up on anything with ourselves. Like, there's no meeting no more. Like, this is why Dr. King was so important. This is why Malcolm X was so important. Because you had somebody that wasn't, and this is before social media and all this other crap, and one little thing puts you out of favor with everybody. You had people that could galvanize a people and that could make them be disciplined. The work that King did and SNCC that they did not get along. They didn't. They fought. They argued. They cussed each other out in the church, yo. They would have these meetings in the church, cursing and yelling and a whole bunch of stuff. And then they said, check this out. We gotta operate on these three things. This is what we gotta operate on. This is what we want. Voting rights. This is what we're going for. We're gonna all do this march. And then King's people were smart enough to say, you know what? TV is going to be our biggest weapon. And what they did is there was a person on King's team. So people think that King was just meek and super nice and kissing babies and all that stuff. King was a beast. He was a ruthless beast for his people. And what I mean by that is the plan was to manipulate, to find a weak target, to showcase white people mistreating black people on television, because it never got into the homes of these people, right? So a lot of people around the country that lived in their bubbles, interesting enough, didn't believe that black folks was getting mistreated. They didn't believe that people were sicking dogs on folks. So they said, we got to get this stuff on camera. So they looked around the country, and what they said was, oh, snap, there's this cat, Bull Connor. He has no discipline. I mean, this is the type of Martin Luther King Day show we should be doing, right? We had this conversation. So they said, Bull Connor, he has no discipline. So what they did is they agitated Bull Connor. They went to places where they told him not to go. They went into public spaces and they started to protest and they started to march. And they made sure that the world showed up. They made sure. And they almost didn't get the stuff they needed. They almost didn't. And then one day, all hell broke loose. And you got that image of a dog biting a black person. And that stuff instantly became local, national, and international news. That's how that happened. That's who Martin Luther King was. And Martin Luther King, after he got those voting rights, which he was not happy about, he was coming for liberal white people. He was coming to say, yo, it's cool that you like went to Harvard. It's cool that you go to Stanford, that you go to UC Berkeley. But it's real poor people. And I'm about to show you the difference between these folks. We about to do this poor people's movement. Let me show you what that is. And I promise you, if King was here today, if he was still able to preach the stuff that he was able to preach, I promise you, you wouldn't like him. Well, I would. I would love him. You know what I'm saying? But I promise you, like, all the things that people are coming at us about right now, when we talk about police brutality and we talk about poverty and we talk about how government systems have been failing people, and we talk about all these things and folks get upset and they get frustrated, what you think King was talking about? What you think he was on? So on this day of reflection for me is people like me now. But people like winners. And what I mean by winners is now I got a decent job. I can get my hair cut. I can get a lineup. I don't look crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not, you know, I can do well for myself. I can speak pretty well. I can write some stuff. I got access. I can get on a plane and go somewhere now. But 10-year-old Charles and my parents at that time, I mean, I come from, I'm the baby of two criminals, two real ass criminals. You know what I'm saying? Like, my dad was a big brooding guy. I love Minister Cole to death. I like the old one too, but they two different people. And as long as we separate out the good Negroes from these other black people or the good Mexicans from these other people, as long as we able to continue to separate those folks out, We're not going to move forward. And it's going to be easy for the Republicans to break us apart and take us out because we're in these smaller little factions. Say what you want about these Republicans, man. Say what you want about Tea Party people. Remember the Tea Party? Remember we used to laugh at the Tea Party? Remember we used to talk about how it's just a small little group of folks and the Republican Party ain't gonna let them take over? Remember that? Listen, man. A little voice coupled with some organization multiplied by some discipline equals results, son. Equals results. When those people can get a platform for Sarah Palin, when those people can get platforms for Joe the Plumber, and now they got their president in there, and we can only be mad at ourselves. We can try to lambast and get mad at these other people. You want to listen, man? People are always talking about democracy. Democracy this, democracy that. Listen, you live in a democratic republic, okay? That means that you choose. You don't live in a true democracy. You don't live in a true democracy. I'm kind of scared to live in a true democracy, especially when I make up 13% of the population. Right? And Maya's absolutely correct. She said platforms, they have costs that they have to be engineered. I absolutely agree. There are some folks in there that have some money. But there are some of these progressive people that got some money too. They got some money too. But this is the thing. That, like I said, the LGBTQ like platform got built. It is built. It is strong. That apparatus is strong. And I'm happy for them. I have no issue with that. But I don't think that platform, that black people have not been able to build and sustain that platform because we are so easy to like, it's so easy to keep us separated. So when we look at this, right, like let's just keep it like all the way funky. I'm gonna keep it all the way honey with you. I have worked, if and when I have children, I'm single in these streets, right? I enjoy my singleness. Let's say, but if I have children, regardless of the school I put my kids in, regardless of the circumstance, because of who I am and the connections I got and the critical social capital that I'm in possession of, my kids going to struggle on some things, but for the most part, they're going to be okay because I'm going to have money. I'm putting money away for them. I understand how to navigate these systems. I understand how to teach them how to navigate these systems and all that stuff. There's a safety net that my grind has built for them. Sometimes when you're white or you come from privilege or whatever the case is, that apparatus, that safety net is just under. It's just there. But when you poor and you black or you Latino or you Southeast Asian, or even if you like a poor white person in the middle of Kentucky, because I've seen that too, there is no safety net. So you get in trouble once. You get caught smoking some weed. And now you just in trouble, and that begets more trouble. Like that thing leads to something else. Cocaine ran rampant in the 80s. Tore my family apart, yo. Crack tore my family apart. And there was a war on crime. There was a war on drugs. And in that war on drugs, that meant that there were tanks coming down the streets in Los Angeles and Chicago taking out crack houses. Fast forward to 2016. People have rediscovered heroin, baby. Heroin is back with a vengeance, okay? It's like Vietnam all over again. You got all these little kids is on heroin. These white folks in the middle of America is on heroin. So now there's a war on heroin. But you know what it looks like? For this government that hates to help people, for this government that doesn't believe in welfare states, that looks like methadone clinics. It looks like support. It looks like an increase in facilities. It looks like a decriminalization of the use of the drug to focus on treatment. Do you understand how that's different? Because you don't have a damn platform as a black person, and because black people was the people that was suffering the most in mass from crack. Like, when people are saying that things are inherently racist, that's what they're talking about. But it's not enough just to know what's inherently racist and what's not. Like, you still got to work. You still got to do what you got to do. You still got to grind. You got to build those platforms on your own. You got to make sure that your safety net is there. So if my homie got a kid, if any of my friends is in here and they got kids and they on this Facebook live thing or they watch the podcast or whatever, and they need some support around the school system, then they have access to me and they have access to my network. That's how we have to think. How are we networked up to where I'm good wherever? So I got friends in Chicago. I got friends in Atlanta. I got friends in DC. I got friends in New York. If I need to go and start over, who's going to help me? Who's going to be there for me? Because when you got networks, yo, you don't really do resumes. Let me explain what I mean by that. People that know people ain't really at home pining on their resume and just taking out 100 and 150 resumes and sending them out to people. That's not how that works. When you got a network, you say, these are my skills and my goals. And your friends, your networks, they say, oh, I got a friend that does X, Y, and Z, and he needs a job or she needs a job. And then that person says, well, tell him to do this. Tell him to do that. Tell him to send me this by tomorrow. Tell them to send me this stuff next week and I'll get them an interview. But we still, you know, we don't have those type of networks. We don't have those type of systems in place. So, in closing, I think that we still got to have this fight for justice. I think that we still do need some type of charismatic leader that can help to galvanize us. And I think that we have to get very clear on like two or three things that we want and push towards that stuff and hold people accountable. Clowning people on Twitter is fun, but I don't know if that's going to totally get you what you need or get us what we need as a people, but maybe it will. I don't know. I'm not dependent on the government. Like, I'm not dependent. Let me make sure I say this the right way, because I think our government should help people. What I'm saying is I didn't have high expectations regardless of who sat in that seat. And as much as I love Barack Hussein Obama, I didn't think he was coming to save me either. Nobody is coming to save you. Nobody. So at least figure out how we save ourselves and how we save each other. My nephews are straight because of my network and his father's network and the networks that we build and we envelope those kids in. They will have chances. And we're going to be hard on them because this world is still hard. But they going to have opportunities because we're going to make sure that they do. You understand what I'm saying? Anyway, I love talking to y'all, man. The new website is energyconverters.org. You can tweet me at @ccole3rd. If there's any questions that folks have, put them in before I close us out. But I super appreciate everybody and everybody's support, man. It's been a long year. Last year was a tough year, but it was also an amazing year. Let me just tell you what we did together. Together, things that I wrote, words that came out of my head, went on some paper, and then I typed in a computer, got seen by more than 400,000 people. Podcasts that came out of my head, in from my brain or whatever, just me riffing with you all, got seen by 150,000 people. That led to having a network that when something came out, when I tweeted a picture about my parents, it led to the White House and Malcolm Jamal Warner and all these folks reposting it, to which led to a video of my parents and their story of struggle and addiction and what they came through and a glimpse into my childhood. That video is now at 3.6 million people, million views. And so I just want to thank you all humbly from the bottom of my heart. I know that success is something that's perceived. I don't think that I'm there yet. But if this is something that helps kids that's growing up where I grow up and getting to kind of see something different, then I'm proud of it, and I'll do it as much as I can. And any way that I can support any of you all, you let me know. If there's a school, if there's a coffee group, if there's a chat or anything that I need to be at or I need to write something, let me know. I'm truly humbled, and I truly believe that we got to take care of each other. I'm not perfect. Nobody is. And I feel like in this new social media instant gratification world, they just waiting for you to slip up. And it's going to happen at some point. But how we hold each other as a people is important. Because I can do the work that I need to do, and I don't need to be liked by other outside groups. But if my people got me, if I got a strong network of folks that's going to hold me up and hold me accountable with love, then I can do a bunch of stuff. I've already exceeded my expectations for my life just from where, hell, just thinking about what I wanted my life to be when I was 12. I've the things, my wildest dreams at that time, I've done those things up to this point. So I just think humility and being thankful is something that's really important. I will try to continue to keep working and work harder for you all and for myself and for my family. And in the meantime, man, y'all take care of each other. You take care of yourselves. Check out the website. Offer any feedback. And I look forward to talking to y'all again soon. With that being said, yo, God bless. Peace.